Hey folks, greetings from the Offensive Security Group here at Secure IT 360, coming at you with a new episode of the Cyber Threat Perspective. Today we have the illustrious Darius on the podcast again. Darius, how's it going?
Yeah, doing well. How are you?
Good, good. So in this episode, we break down the complexities of credential protection, and Darius and I dig into everything from the user education side of things, threat modeling, to tools, to guardrails, to secrets management and cloud and DevSecOps and all that stuff. And we really kind of dig into the world of protecting credentials within scripts, within code, and everywhere else you can imagine that credentials might be. So this is a must listen for all IT admins, CISOs, IT directors, IT security folks. And we hope you get value from this discussion. Hopefully you take away something that you can implement in your environment or go and hunt for these things in your environment and get rid of them and secure them. So Darius, welcome to the podcast again. How's it going?
Yeah, I mean, can't complain. I'm really excited. This is, you know, a really kind of interesting topic because, I mean, at the end of the day, as we're pen testing, right, creds are king. And it's, you know, it's everything kind of starts and kind of progresses with creds. I mean, you start a pen test, right? If you're doing an assumed breach, you have a set of credentials. As you're digging and finding ways to move laterally or escalate your privileges, credentials are kind of a crucial part of that, right? So this is a very exciting topic.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, passwords have become ubiquitous with logging into stuff. You know, over time, you know, users and just people in general have accumulated hundreds, if not thousands, of passwords, you know, bank accounts and social media and your corporate logins. And then you have all the individual apps that you use at work. And so many different things that a password is used for. And that's just one type of credential, right? You know, a lot of times people think of credentials as just a username and password, but credentials could be a private key, right? It could be an API key. It could be some sort of certificate. There's, you know, authenticators that are credential material. So when we think of credentials, this definitely goes well beyond passwords. But it starts, to me, in my mind, from a protection standpoint, from a defensive standpoint. If I'm an IT person, if I'm a security professional, if I'm an IT director, a CISO, or anybody in between whose job is to like manage systems or secure them, in my mind, it kind of starts with threat modeling, right, Darius?
Yeah.
So we have to think about what is it we're trying to protect? What is the value of those things that we're trying to protect? What are the threats and the risks against exposure of those things? That, to me, is kind of where it starts. I'd be curious your thoughts on kind of this threat modeling aspect of protecting credentials.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, you'll forever hear me say, I feel like every time I come on the podcast, I say this in some shape or fashion. It all starts with the basics, and you know, call me cynical or whatever, but I'm a firm believer that, you know, most places you're probably not doing all of the basics effectively, and that it, but if you do, you drastically reduce risk, right? So, I mean, proper threat modeling is definitely a part of it. You know, we were talking a little bit earlier to your point, right? It's very easy to over-engineer things. I am the king of over-engineering things, right? And so threat modeling definitely kind of helps to kind of reel that in a little bit, right? Like, you only want to make sure that you're properly identifying your threats, you know, make sure you know your assets. And then, you know, you want to apply just enough security, right, to secure said assets. So I can agree that, you know, threat modeling is definitely kind of a crucial step,
yeah,
you know, towards all things security.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm giving a presentation at ILTA Evolve next week, and I'm going to mention the exact same thing that you mentioned. I'm going to start the presentation with this quote that was shared to me by Mark Brophy, and that is, ransomware threat actors are really good at the basics, and that shows against organizations that are not good at the basics, essentially, is what the quote is. And that has never been more true, I think, in the world of security, because, you know, a lot of times we focus on these big zero days, these CVEs, these, you know, newsworthy exploits and vulnerabilities. But so much of what happens day to day from an incident perspective is just tried and true, you know, standard operating procedures for these ransomware groups and other threat actors. And, you know, doing the basics is not easy. A lot of the stuff is not easy. It's difficult. It takes coordination and communication and collaboration. But it is the thing that really matters. So threat modeling to me is step number one. And what you just mentioned is a great starting point for that. Education. Also something I saw on social media or something I tweeted that got mixed responses was a couple days ago or yesterday or something like that. I tweeted out that weak passwords are not the end user's fault. And that was met with mixed reactions.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, that's
but kind of the core of what I was getting at was weak passwords ultimately are the result of a weak system, weak processes, weak implementations, right? And while users should be responsible for, you know, not creating a password that's password one or nonsensical things like that, in my mind, blaming the user doesn't do as much good as it does to focus on the root cause. But that being said, I think there is an important aspect of this where you need to educate users because some people just don't know what makes a strong password, what they should and shouldn't use. There is some level of responsibility and education that I think is required and that everybody should be doing. And I think most people are doing that. But I'd be curious to your thought on education, you know, developers, leadership, psychology, and things like that.
Yeah, so I think education is definitely part of it. It's definitely a part of it. And to your point, I can see why you probably ruffled a couple of sysadmins' feathers a little bit with that tweet. And I think that kind of leads me to kind of my initial thought as we talk about education and really end users is I think we focus so much on the tech side of things. And even, you know, you have cases where, you know, it's really easy. You see it on Reddit all the time, right? Where you have a lot of sysadmins out there who are just kind of have this mentality that like, all end users are, you know, just inherently, for lack of a better terms, I guess, inherently just incapable of, you know, handling security and things of that nature. I think we have to realize and kind of shift from that the way of thinking of like, hey, these are humans. These are people. You definitely need, you know, you definitely want technical guardrails and things at that point. But man, if you take care of your people, then, you know, people plus tech in tandem, once again, drastically reduces your risk. And so I think it's kind of important to, you know, include, you know, education, like educate your users, to your point, on strong password policies. Incentivize them to, you know, to use password managers, not just in terms of, hey, when you're working with us and our resources, but just in your day-to-day life, hey, here's some, you know, great things to do. I think that's extremely important. And I think it's also kind of, we should also kind of understand the psychology of people.
Yep.
And so I think that comes back to, you know, you have the classic case of, once again, you know, you have an admin somewhere who you're going to implement this super strong password policy because humans are fallible and tech isn't. And so, yep, 20 characters, you know, the whole nine yards of like, you know, special characters, numbers, et cetera, right? Well, great. You implemented what I would consider a pretty strong password policy. Mm-hmm. For all your end users, but let's talk about the psychology of people. If you create a password policy of that nature, you're now incentivizing people to, I'm gonna write my password down. Or, okay, I have something, but now I have to change it. So I'm just gonna go up one number. Or I'm going to use phrases. And you basically now, you know, you're hindering yourself a little bit. So I definitely think it's, you know, we need to kind of, there's a balance to it, right? It's all a balancing act. And so you want to definitely take that approach of, you know, making sure your policies, procedures, and tech that you have also falls in alignment with understanding your people.
Yep. Yeah, that's a great point. And in my mind, incentives work a lot better than punishments. Right. And I think there is ample evidence to support that when you give users a reward or you give something of value to them for doing something that you would like them to do, it reinforces that good behavior that you want them to do. And when you punish for those things, in my mind, that punitive action makes them kind of resent that thing and makes them even want to revolt more, right? It's kind of like parenting in a way. Like if you tell the kid no and you punish them for doing something as opposed to rewarding them for doing the good thing, it's almost like this weird psychological thing where they want to do that bad thing more. Like they want to revolt, they want to rebel. So I'm definitely in the camp of incentivizing and not punishing users for mistakes or weak passwords and stuff like that. The other thing I want to mention is even if you have those strong technical controls, like you said, users are going to find a way to do their job and do it as efficiently as possible. Yep. So case in point, we're on a pen test one time. We captured some hashes and this organization had a really good password policy. They were upfront about it. We're like, listen, we have 20 character passphrases across the board. Every single user has a 20 character passphrase. I'm like, okay, cool. I got the hashes. I was like, there's no way I'm going to crack these. There's no way. So I just did it anyways, just, you know, to cross T's. And sure enough, I cracked like 4 20 character passphrases because they were just weak passwords. So even though they were long, they were weak passwords. They were like Bible verses or popular songs or things that you would see in a word list that would combine like natural language, like how you would speak or write a song, things like that. So that goes to your point, Darius, and illustrates the point that even if you create strong technical controls, there's still opportunities for users to abuse those controls to weaken those systems. So it's always a good idea for education and to teach users like, hey, here's what the policy is. Here's why we have it this way. Here's how to implement these things securely. Which means it's actually a great segue, right? And you mentioned it previously, which is guardrails, right? Guardrails, technical controls that mitigate or prevent users from doing bad things, right? If you don't want users to use the company name in your passwords, in their passwords, create a banned password list. You can do this with Entra, Azure AD. You can do this with third-party tools, like with SpecOps. You can use your own custom banned password lists within Active Directory. So there's a number of ways to do this, but there is technology now to restrict which passwords users can actually use. So I think things like that to help users and create guardrails for them so that they can't use that weak password is better than blaming the user and just relying solely on them to create a strong password.
No, I 100% agree with that. I mean, I was reading this tweet where the kind of consensus of the tweet was basically like, hey, you know, we as security professionals, you know, we're always like, yeah, you're always kind of gung-ho about like, man, we need more resources, more funding, and all that's true. But I think sometimes it's really easy as we're kind of, you know, promoting that we forget that at the end of the day, for most businesses, right, the goal is to make money, and that's oftentimes a different group. So, you know, a lot of cases, the cybersecurity group is not the group making the company money. And so you want to provide proper guardrails to basically, you know, secure your environment, but you don't want to hinder and, you know, lock your users up. And so I would just, you know, it's another thing that I just think we as kind of professionals kind of have to remember amidst all the, you know, weekly news articles about, hey, you know, there's this now this another breach, you know, this other breach, so on and so forth.
Exactly. Because, you know, psychology of humans, like you said, if you make something hard and you make something extraneously difficult for a user to complete their job or do their work, they're going to find ways around it. You know, people like to have efficiency and flow in their work. And if whatever you have implemented is too difficult for them, they're going to try and most likely find ways around it.
Which I guess kind of also leads, once again, as you're back to threat modeling, back to when you're trying to cover your basics, right? Making sure that you're doing your basics in a way that fits and matches your business. Yep. So yes, remove local admin rights. That can sometimes cause, you know, issues, right? Okay, well, here's, you know, make it fit your environment. So maybe you remove local admin rights, but you have a way for people to temporarily escalate their privileges. There's tons of tools for doing that, right? Like maybe, you know, you have a select group of users who keep their local admin rights, but you have additional monitoring and controls specifically for those accounts to kind of compensate, right? So it's all about doing the basics.
And it's a big game of compromise, right? It's never black or white, one or zero. It's never like all or nothing with this stuff. It's always, you know, you're always going to have exceptions, right? You're always going to have situations where, oh, this application, you know, you can't go more than 8 characters. You know, like with the old AS400 series systems, like you just couldn't have long passwords. That just wasn't supported. Okay, what can we do, you know, to compensate for that? Same with end users, right? Maybe, like you said, end user, you know, Bob needs local admin because they're remote and they have to troubleshoot things on a regular basis. Okay, fine. How do we handle that and create mitigations around that? So, yeah, great point. The next, moving on, we wanted to mention something you brought up before in the pre-show is logs, so log files. So protecting credentials, right? There are always opportunities for credentials to end up in log files and in dumps and things like that. We've seen that affect large organizations like Microsoft, and we see that all the time during our penetration tests with, you know, 1,000 attorney law firms, with financial services organizations, with municipalities. This is ubiquitous to networks. This is not any one individual organization size, maturity, et cetera. This happens all the time. And, you know, I was on an engagement just this week, right? We're doing a pen test and, you know, there's, you know, credentials in log files, you know, just it happens. So what are your thoughts on handling those situations? How do you identify that stuff? What are maybe some ideas for kind of dealing with this and kind of how to identify those, you think, Darius?
Yeah, so I guess I think first off, it kind of goes to my first thing on mine kind of goes to is how often are we actually looking and evaluating our logs? I think in a lot of cases, we end up in a situation where we only look at logs when something is wrong. Mm-hmm. And if the system, you know, nothing ever goes bump in the night, we don't look at them. There's no need to, right? And so I think it starts with paying more attention to your logs, not just Windows logs, but also when you bring in a new solution into your environment, verify and check those logs. I mean, you see it all the time, Spencer, right? Where, you know, they've implemented proper controls to prevent certain things from happening in the Windows event log, right? But they bring in this new solution, they've vetted it, right? But they always forget the logs. And so, you know, now it's just a matter of, hey, you go to the folder, the directory of this application, you dig around a little bit, and oh, look, API keys. Oh, look, SQL creds. Oh, look, you know, a plethora of all this stuff, right? So I think it starts with actively looking at your logs, which can be boring. Don't get me wrong, be boring, but I think it's such a crucial step. And if I'm not mistaken, I mean, there, one, you can always write your own, right? You can write a PowerShell script that says, hey, go out, recursively look through these directories, look within, you know, text files, log files, config files, et cetera, and, you know, have keywords. That's a relatively simple script to write. If you don't want to write it, I'm sure that there are tools available right now that will help you identify and do that for you. But, you know, it starts there. And I think a lot of places aren't doing that. My mind also goes to when writing custom stuff, this kind of goes to our developers and things of that nature. It's, you know, sanitize your logs where you can, you know, I know it's once again, it's a balancing act, right? You want to have enough information to figure out the problem, but you know, you don't want to compromise yourself in the process.
Yep. Yeah. And I think a good place to start, in a common location, I usually always see credentials and log files is as a result of things like logon scripts. So you have a logon script that does a certain thing, or maybe you have a script that runs on the first login that installs all the software that the user needs, puts shortcuts on the desktop, and you know, maybe does some stuff. It's common to find credentials there as like a first setup. So they need to connect to something and install a printer or whatever the case may be. That's a common location that I usually find credentials in. So look at your logon scripts, look at things that have an authentication component to it. You know, if there's an SSO component to an application, look for those logs. Maybe there's some sort of authentication code or an API key or some sort of other credential material that might be resident in those logs accidentally. This is something that I saw recently on a university. So universities have like this alert system, right? So they can send out, you know, hey, if there's an active shooter or there's a weather event or, you know, anything else that, you know, students on the campus need to know, it will send an alert to every computer that this is installed on, right? It's great. Well, some of those applications have log files, and it puts the credentials for that application right in the log file. And I saw that recently on a university pen test, an internal pen test. So it's just a matter of thinking, going back to threat modeling, you know, thinking, okay, if I'm a threat actor and I'm an adversary, I want to look for credentials. Where would I look for it? And you just go digging and go looking on your systems, and you know your systems best. So more often than not, you can probably find some things that you didn't know were there or you wouldn't have found otherwise if you weren't looking.
So basically, check your logs before the threat action does for you.
That's right. Check your logs.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I'm really excited about this, I guess, now, because we're kind of shifting into, I guess, more of the, you know, we talked about users. Now we're shifting more towards, I guess, the technical side of things. And that kind of leads us to the next point of scripts in code. So, you know, I've said it before, you know, I think developers kind of get the brunt of this, right? In terms of, you know, the obvious, right? You have the obvious rule of thumb when it comes to coding and credentials, right? And the big one is don't put credentials in scripts. We hammer that into developers, right? Which we should. But I think we often forget about our infrastructure at, you know, our infrastructure guys as well, your sysadmins, your network admins. Yep. That applies to you all too. That applies to your PowerShell scripts. That applies to your batch scripts. That applies to your Terraform configs. Where you can, keep your credentials out of these scripts. It's just something we see so much on Pentest. I know you see it all the time too, where it's like you just mentioned it, right? It's like, bingo, a logon script. Cool.
Yep.
You know? So.
Yeah, a good example of this is, so on internal pen tests, sometimes I'll get access to an admin's workstation, right? And I'll go immediately to their PowerShell console history, and I'll look, and I'll see that they're setting up, you know, new users in Microsoft 365. So they will, you know, log in using the commandlet, the PowerShell commandlets, and they'll log in with, like, their administrator account, which is great. They have separation of admin accounts, their daily use account, and then they have their admin account. Awesome. I'd love to see that. The problem is they're entering that password in line in that script instead of using like a credential object or using the dash credential with the prompt or things like that. So they'll just enter their password right there on the command line, which is logged in the console history. And then I get to steal it and use it. So that's a good example of something that I see all the time is like, oh, you know, I'm an IT admin. I'm on my workstation. Nobody has access to it. It's just me. But, you know, if somebody happens to get access to it, now those credentials are in that log file where they don't really need to be.
No, and that's a really great example. I mean, yeah, purge your PowerShell history. I think that's something that often gets forgotten about.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. Transcription logs, console history. You know, we have this assumption that our systems are safe because it's just me logging into it. But, you know, going back to threat modeling and assumptions, like you have to assume that some bad actor is going to get access to that system. And if there's a way to easily avoid it, you know, that it's a good way to mitigate that risk.
And I guess another kind of example that I kind of think of is Kubernetes. And that's one to where often, you know, misconfigurations and, you know, Kubernetes can be pretty complex. It's really easy to have a situation to where a user or a pod has access to a secret it shouldn't. So I think kind of one of the prime examples I think of that I've seen before is where, you know, you have your Kubernetes environment down, you're practicing least privilege, and you're like, yeah, my pods only have access to the secrets that, you know, to retrieve secrets that they need access to, which is great, right? But then we forget that, you know, the other part of it, right? You have users. Well, if you have a user that can create or access pods, they essentially have access to all the secrets that those pods have access to. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, oftentimes we end up in a situation to where, you know, you're not fully covered strictly due to a misconfiguration, a lack of understanding of, you know, how the technology works.
Yep. And what about Git? I know we wanted to mention Git and GitHub and just version control in general.
Yeah.
What have you seen? What are your thoughts on kind of protecting credentials there?
So first of all, once again, don't put creds in scripts, credentials in scripts, right? Which you, even if you do, make sure that you're not pushing it to your repo. And you know, we've had cases to where, you know, hey, I'm doing a web app pen test, and throughout the web app pen test, I basically come across, you know, there's a .git. Ooh, I now have, you know, Git access, right? I download it, and then I use like a tool like Git Dumper or something along those lines. And then I'm now like, okay, the first thing I do is let me look at all the commits and look at the versions, the differences between those commits. And a lot of times you'll find credentials or you'll find an environmental file, right? And so I think, once again, it's kind of a case of making sure you have a policy procedure in place as far as, hey, when you commit to Git, make sure you have a Git ignore. And make sure that your Git ignore is excluding things like your environmental file. Make sure that you don't have, you know, credentials and scripts and things of that nature. And luckily, that's become a lot easier, right? There are tons of tools now that you can integrate into your pipeline to kind of prevent that from happening. And then even if, let's say, you use GitHub, right? GitHub is now also, you know, they now have detections for that as well, where they'll say, hey, we think we found a password in your code. Mm-hmm. Go handle it.
Yeah, and that's a good segue, because we wanted to talk about tools and things you can use to protect credentials, not just, you know, the theory or the concepts or the techniques behind it, but the tools. So you've listed a bunch of secret managers. I'm familiar with Thycotic's secret server, which is now Delinea. There's CyberArk, which is like an enterprise vaulting password management tool. A lot of these tools have really fancy features, like Thycotic or Delinea and Secret Server. Like CyberArk, they have a lot of really unique tools. They can monitor RDP and SSH sessions. They can automatically rotate passwords. They can allow you to check in or check out a password, and then it expires after like 60 minutes, and then the password rotates automatically, and you got to check it out again. There's a lot of really neat technologies. They're really cool, and most of them are really expensive, but there are some really sophisticated tools that you can use to manage credentials and things like that. So maybe just share some of your favorites or some that you recommend people look into for protecting credentials in scripts and code in like a DevOps scenario and stuff like that.
So I guess, once again, I think before you think you hit the nail on the head. And one of the things I kind of first, before I, you know, tell you my personal favorite, I think it's important to those features you mentioned, right? Is making sure whatever solution you use supports your policies and procedures. So, I mean, one of the things that I'm a personal advocate of is roll your secrets on a cadence. I think one thing that often gets a lot of people, and you see, you know, you see it all the time, where it's like you set the secret once, forget about it, and then it gets compromised. If you're constantly rolling your passwords on a cadence, you drastically reduce your risk, right? Mm-hmm. So that's one thing I definitely recommend. You know, that's something that I would want to see in a secret manager. I like your idea of, like, you know, what you mentioned, being able to check in and check out secrets. That's beautiful, because you now, at the bare minimum, right, you should have a log of, hey, this identity accessed this secret at this time. And if you, you know, if you have a SOC or, you know, whatever solution you have for monitoring, you're now able to kind of ingest that a little bit. If you do it right, you get behavioral analysis to where it's like, hey, this identity accessed a secret that is never accessed before. That mm-hmm. seems odd. And if you do it right, you know, you potentially caught something, right? So those are all things that I'd want to see in a secret manager. To your point, I was a huge fan of the Thycotic secret server cloud. I know that's, or the cloud version of it. I know that's changed. They've changed it, right? But recently, what I've been kind of playing around with that I'm a fan of is AWS Secret Manager, as well as Azure Key Vault. I think both of those cloud solutions work pretty well, especially if you already have workflows, you know, with those cloud service providers anyways. And that kind of leads me to my other point of, you know, the landscape has shifted, right? So in the past, when it came to secrets and credentials, we often thought of users. And then we thought of, you know, eventually got to the point where we need to think about, you know, our scripts and our code. Well, now that's kind of shifted even more to where we really have to think that almost everything now, particularly especially in like cloud environments, is an identity. And those identity can access resources, including secrets. And so, you know, we really have to start wrapping our mind around the fact that it's not just users. It's also, hey, this VM I spun up, or maybe this Lambda function I spun up. And, you know, just thinking about this concept of, hey, all of our cloud resources in some capacity, for the most part, have an identity. And so from there, let's practice least privilege. So like a common thing that we'll see a lot of times is, you know, the classic case of we just wanted it to work. And so you may have an EC2 instance that's just way overly permissive, or a Lambda function, or even a Kubernetes pod that they're just like, yep, we can access all secrets. Well, the moment that pod function or EC2 instance gets popped, now the threat actor has access to all those secrets, right? You know, making sure I want to, you know, make that's kind of what I think of in terms of secret managers, and you know, especially when you're dealing with the ones that are kind of in the cloud.
Yep, and I think one of the gotchas with these secret managers is when you're looking at going from not having one of these tools, these vaults or these secret managers, to buying one, the common pitfall is that you see all these features and these cool things, you're like, oh, that's awesome, let's buy that one, or let's get all those features. And then you buy it and it just sits there and you don't use it. You just like put passwords in it and use it as a password manager exclusively, and you don't use any of those fancy features that you're paying a lot of money for. So I think a good one of my recommendations, something I did myself when looking at this, is what are the features that we're using right now? Like, what do we need from a secrets manager right now? What are the things that we really need? What are our the problems that we're trying to solve? What are the features that we're using right now in our current system, or that we need, or that would help us? And map your requirements to those features and those products.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I was just gonna say, I think another thing that often when it comes with a project like that is you end up with the backlog of work of like, well, now we have to rewrite everything. And that can be annoying, and I totally get it. I've been through that a couple different times, but it's like, once you do it, it makes your life so much easier. I think of, you know, a case where, you know, a team that I was working on, we implemented the secret manager, and, you know, it was annoying at first having to rewrite everything. But now it's at the point to where, man, we can click a button and our secrets rotate all in one place.
Yep.
And, you know, we have it set to where, you know, our code and our solutions are now built in a way to where it's only accessing secrets during runtime. It never touches, you know, it never touches anything. It doesn't touch a log. It doesn't touch anything on disk. And, you know, that's huge.
Yep, for sure. And I know we've been kind of talking about protecting credentials from kind of like a proactive standpoint. So not putting them in scripts, checking your logs, kind of techniques for managing those credentials. But there's also a conversation about monitoring, right? And auditing and looking where those identities are logging in. You mentioned identities earlier with cloud, you know, being able to monitor and have some data to say that, oh, this user is accessing this share, or this user is accessing this cloud resource and they don't normally access that. So having some analytics, some data, some audit logs, or whatever you can for that is also helpful in protecting credentials, right? So what were you thinking, Darius, along the lines of logs, auditing, analytics, kind of monitoring for, you know, as a way to protect credentials?
Yeah, so I think this is definitely kind of pie in the sky. I have no idea this exists. It probably does, or it's if not, it's probably in the work. But I think kind of one of the immediate things I think of is we have all this data now. We also have the rise of AI. I would really love to see some of these secret managers or a solution or a monitoring solution that's able to take that data and is able to do things like some of the behavioral detections as far as, you know, hey, we know that, you know, we know that this Lambda function, you know, every time it runs, it only accesses this specific secret, which is great. We can ignore that. But it does something, let's say it did something different, you know, I want to receive an alert for that. Or I think of a case where, you know, we take maybe the flip approach to it. We flip that approach a little bit where we say, hey, I have this secret. I know that consistently based on the logs, these identities are accessing the secrets, but now there's a new one. I want to receive an alert on that.
Yep.
So I think this is us kind of, we have an opportunity to really create some advanced detections surrounding what's now accessing, you know, secrets.
Yep, for sure. And I'm sure products out there that are more enterprise grade that have audit logs and logging in general, you know, you pipe that to a SIM and maybe you write some custom detections around that. But also, there's a number of products that have come out just recently or in the last several years for detecting identity-based attacks, right? Microsoft Defender for Identity, it's identity-based. CrowdStrike has an identity product. There are other EDR vendors that are going the same route. And this makes me think of the UEBA, User Entity Behavior Analytics discussion that was happening, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago. That was, UEBA was like a big thing. It was a big buzzword, right? If you remember, what happened was EDR just kind of encapsulated that stuff. And EDR kind of took a lot of those things along with the SIM tools, and it kind of got cannibalized by those two products. And UEBA now is not really a thing that you really hear of so much. It's kind of just baked into these other security products. But that's essentially what you're talking about is behavior analytics of this user normally doesn't log into the domain controller. Now all of a sudden they're logging in. Let's throw an alert, right? Yeah. Or, you know, using hashes to authenticate with like pass the hash attacks, which Defender for Identity, I think, can now detect. Same with CrowdStrike's identity product. So doing it based on identity, there are a number of products that are coming out now to focus on identity-based attacks. Because that is, like you said, that's the frontier of attacks now, is identities and endpoints.
Yep. I think something else just to, now that we're kind of thinking about it, is not just reducing it, you know, just to, hey, you know, this user has never accessed a secret before. But I think even, you know, where you can lock down and restrict, you know, the who, what, when, where, and whys when it comes to access, right? So you have conditional access policy. You know, you have a lot of solutions now where you can say, hey, I'm going to generate my API key, but you can also say, hey, I only want, you know, access should only be from the US, right? Anytime you have a control like that you can put into place, you know, definitely want to make sure that we implement it.
Yep, for sure. And, you know, I have in the notes tools and things like that. I think the tools are great. I think the tools will come and go. I think the important concepts, or I think the important discussion is the concepts, right? It's the techniques, it's the methodology behind it, it's the theory behind it, it's the what. The how is great. There's a number of tools. We've mentioned a whole bunch, and those are all great, but those are going to be unique to your organization, to your use cases, your environment, and all sorts of things. Your budget is a big one, and those are going to be unique to you, but starting with the why and the what, like what do we need to do? How do we need to do it? And then matching that with a solution, matching that with tools, matching that with some capabilities is kind of how I would approach that.
No, I can agree. And I know, I guess for me personally, what I found what works best for my use case after kind of going through that process, when it comes to tools, I immediately, and I always recommend it, Bitwarden. It 100% kind of checks the box off of everything that I need. It's a great password manager. It's secure. If you want to use the cloud version, you can, but I also like the fact that you can also host it yourself, right? Yep. And not even have to deal with, you know, the cloud kind of portion of it. It has MFA support, as well as you can have it on multiple devices, which is something that I really love. I really love the fact that I can have, you know, my extension, but also I have it on my phone and it all syncs. It all works seamlessly. All my MFA is in one place. Really love it. You have history, you know, you have a history something else that I kind of really like. And then a new feature recently added, I know I kind of sound like a salesperson for Bitwarden right now, but I just really love it, is that it added passkey support. So now you have, you know, digital tokens and passkeys now, which drastically makes, you know, my life a lot easier. So when it comes to tools, I am a huge fan of Bitwarden. And then also, you know, Flipper Zero. You know, I think a lot of times we hear stories about it if people are using it for nefarious purposes. It also has some pretty good everyday-to-day utility as well. And, you know, whether it's you using it as a kind of a digital key ring, but, you know, you too can use your Flipper as a Ubi key.
Yep.
And that's something, you know, that also kind of works. You already have it on you already. Oh, and he's logged in. Just click up the Flipper, access the Ubi key. Now you're logged in.
Yeah, and I'll end with this because I think it's kind of funny and kind of wraps that conversation up into like an example that's funny. I saw on Twitter like yesterday or last week or something, Justin Elzey reshared or retweeted a video of these autonomous drones that were delivering like beverages at a restaurant. So they had this drone that had like a cup holder on it, and they were like delivering beer to people at a restaurant. And he was talking about how like this is an example of how like Flipper Zeros can be used to abuse like these autonomous drones. Like imagine you're at a restaurant, you got your Flipper Zero, and you just like take over this drone and you just get free beverages from the restaurant because you're stealing all these drones that are flying around. Like, that's great. That's hilarious.
Can we do a podcast on the Flipper Zero? It's just such a versatile tool.
Yeah, we should. I don't have one myself, so you guys would have to take the forefront on all the cool, fun stuff that you can do with it. But we should definitely plan to do a Flipper Zero episode. Maybe with some live demonstrations, you know, maybe.
Yeah, I love the sound of that.
Yeah. Cool. Anything else you wanted to touch on?
When it comes to credentials, I think you could just kind of put a nice little bow on it. Do the basics. Educate your users. Follow best practices. If you do those things and you know are intentional about it, then you'll see the benefits of it in the long run.
Awesome, cool. So that's our episode. We appreciate you listening. If you got value from this, or if you enjoyed this conversation, let us know. Comment on when we post this on LinkedIn or YouTube or wherever else. If you would like to follow us, you can follow us on LinkedIn and kind of everywhere the socials are. We release new episodes every Wednesday. And also be sure to check out offsec.blog for all of our content, blogs, videos, posts, and all of that stuff from the offensive security team here at Secure IT 360. And of course, if we can help in any way, check us out at secureit360.com. We'd love to work with you and help you with your security. And with that, we will see you next Wednesday.